Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Maddock. I am joined by Curtis Patrick of RotoViz.com. You guys know him from RotoViz and the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and just all off season long, trying to bring some of the biggest names in Dynasty Fantasy Football to you guys. And I think Curtis definitely fits that agenda. Curtis, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. And for the listeners, like, this is the first time that you and I have actually ever
done a show together.
Yeah, we've never really chatted in this capacity. So I'm pretty pumped. Just kind of feel out some of your strategies, and I'm sure you're feeling the same way. And man, I'm just really excited about this time of year. I love all forms of fantasy sports, but Dynasty, like, it's my
the best.
Bread and butter. Yeah, it's my bread and butter. It's what I love. It's my passion. And there's really, like, these couple weeks that we're right in the midst of right now, they really might be the best time of year for Dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a great time of year. Everyone is getting over the Super Bowl, and they're starting to, a lot of people are just now starting to think about the rookie classes. You and I have probably been grinding the rookie class for the last couple weeks or so, just because there's so much more time in the schedule. I know that I've headed over to FFPC, and I couldn't help myself, grabbed a couple orphan teams. I'm actually literally right now, as we speak, I'm going to go pay for an orphan team that I just adopted last night. So it is, just a great time of year. And it's certainly the most optimistic time of year, where you're like, oh man, I'm going to join 10 leagues. And, one of the things that I've seen you talk about that I'm also really into as well is a way to make playing in more leagues feel really possible is to do Dynasty best ball. I have come around to 12 team super flex 30 man roster best ball dynasty leagues being the absolute best form of fantasy football that there is.
Yeah, that's super great, because it brings more people into play too, like guys that are just so frustrating to own in roster management leagues, like Will Fuller and those guys. Like, all right, well, I'm gonna get his boom games when he has them, but I don't have to fret when he's not available 9 weeks out of the year. So I totally agree. And it also, the super flex angle really makes Dynasty just so much more interesting in general, because there's a whole nother layer of strategy there.
Yeah. And it just makes every player you own valuable, basically. Like, in a regular 12 team league, Dwayne Haskins, like, what, you don't care? Like, he's like a third round rookie pick, and he might even be on the waivers in some dynasty leagues. But in a super flex league, you could maybe trade him for a first round pick because a competing team has Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, Hunter Henry, but they are stuck with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback too. And they just need a quarterback who can get points. So it really is, I think it's just such a great way to play.
Couldn't agree more, man.
All right. So if you had to introduce this draft class to someone doing their first rookie draft, how would you go about describing it?
So I would say, take yourself back to being 12 years old and the first movie or TV show that you watched, and just the smoke show of a female lead comes onto the screen, and you're just like, all of a sudden you just grew up, right? So this class is so desirable, and it makes you realize anything is possible, and it's going to just be an influx of talent into the league and into your dynasty rosters as well. I mean, I think by this time next year, there's probably going to be, I would say conservatively, six players from this class in the top 36 of dynasty startups. There's too much depth at wide receiver for that not to be the truth. And there's really up to five or six running backs that, depending on the draft capital and team situation, are probably going to, really be top 24, top 18 at the running back position next year. So some people stayed, you and I were kind of just chatting before the pod, and Travis Etienne staying was kind of a blow, and Najee Harris staying was kind of a blow. I mean, this class is still just fire. I love it. I want as many 2020 picks as I can possibly get. And when you compare it to last year, which really ended up being okay because we had some mid-round wide receivers hit and it kind of saved the class. But compared to last year, this class is still very, very elite.
I was really hoping. I'm a big Chuba Hubbard guy and a big Travis Etienne guy. You know, I thought because those guys are so good at catching passes. And actually, what's so interesting about this draft class is the guy who I think you and I both have as the number one overall player in non-Superflex, Jonathan Taylor. Anything that you project him in terms of catching passes is just that. It is big time projecting, because that really was not a big part of his game at the University of Wisconsin. I feel about Jonathan Taylor, though, whatever team drafts him, they are drafting him to give that dude 250 touches right away. Like, I think it's going to be a David Montgomery kind of situation, but Jonathan Taylor's actually good.
Man, it is so refreshing to talk to another person that sees this for what it is. Okay, so first, I think there's a little bit less projection with Jonathan Taylor in the pass catching now, because, you know, he did throw up over 250 receiving yards and 26 receptions last year. So the team finally started using him in that way a little bit. And really, if you look at Wisconsin running back history, being used just a little bit in the passing game has been enough to result in NFL production
right.
in that manner. Like, Melvin Gordon, you know, was not throwing up 60 receptions. You know, James White wasn't catching, you know, 60, 70, 80 balls when he was there. And so, you know, Wisconsin, that's just not the way they use their backs. Like, it's okay. Like, we know enough about these big programs to be able to understand that, look, Ohio State wide receivers probably aren't going to dominate.
Yeah, it's like those guys are never going to have 30% market share. And if I would have just been able to tell myself that when Michael Thomas went there, I would have saved myself so much heartache. And it's just like, it's a good thing to know. And I would actually say one of the biggest things that has changed with my way of evaluating wide receivers from now back to when RotoViz first started is we are so much better at accounting for teammate skill than we were back then. Like Odell Beckham actually is a really great example of this. Like, he had so many, like, not only was Jarvis Landry an NFL player, but his quarterback was an NFL quarterback, and there were two NFL running backs on that team. So there just was like a lot of NFL talent. And we used to be, I used to be really bad at adjusting for that stuff. And I think that is one thing that's really changed in the, you know, metric scouting department these days.
Yeah, 100%. And one thing that's kind of been there all along to help us with that, and unfortunately we don't get it until like kind of the end of the rookie prospect recipe, right, is NFL draft position. Because, like, you know, NFL yep. teams understand this dynamic, you know, most of them, really all of them, sure. I mean, they've got huge scouting departments. They understand it better than us. I mean, we like to think we're really smart about this stuff, but they can spot these talents even if the production's not there. And, you know, production's a leading indicator of what could happen in the NFL, but it's certainly not the only thing. I still maintain it's probably the most important thing, but it's definitely not the only thing. So when we talk about Jonathan Taylor, kind of circling back to how we started this little thing, I mean, for me, it shouldn't be so difficult to land on him as your number one back or the number one
right.
class. Like, so what's happened over the past couple years is, you know, people have understood the importance of, you know, you can win with zero RB even in Dynasty. Like, we talk about that for redraft or even for some best ball construction here and there over the years it's worked. But even in Dynasty, you can win with that mentality. But kind of the idea of doing it in Dynasty is that when you come upon a Christian McCaffrey or an Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, you got to lock that guy in.
Yeah, well, you can either lock him in or you move him and replace that with the rookie. Like, rookie and, you know, first and second year backs are kind of like the zero RB, like the later guy. Like, if you get the elite running back, you know, transitioning that into more draft capital that's more solid running backs, or converting it into an elite wide receiver who's probably going to maintain that production for a longer period of time, or flipping it into a quarterback in a super flex format. I mean, those things are probably plus EV over the course of time. But so when we talk about Jonathan Taylor, he's done it since he was 18. He's done it every year. Like, he's been straight fire in college football every single year. You know, he's basically the only knock that you can put on him is he had some problems with fumbling. But, you know, we've seen that fumbling can be a little bit noisy. Doesn't always, you know, project.
It only matters if his coaches think it matters. Like, if he comes out, like, I mean, Kareem Hunt, it is literally true. Yeah. Kareem Hunt fumbled on his first NFL carry, right?
Yeah, and then he just smoked
And then I think he had 45 DraftKings points in that game. Like, it just didn't matter. But you know, if he fumbles right away and then, you know, like I don't, he gets benched, then yeah, then that's going to matter. But I am assuming that whatever team drafts Jonathan Taylor, not all that worried, you know, just they're not really going to be all that worried about his, you know, quote unquote fumbling issue. So, I guess we don't have this in order on our agenda, but why don't you explain why DeAndre Swift is not your 101, which it's weird to me that DeAndre Swift is actually the consensus top overall pick, because I just joined up into a league that does Devy this year, but I think that DeAndre Swift being the 101 is a big like developmental league bias, basically.
Well, it's that, and you know, it all works together. Like I'm not like an ignore film guy. Like, you know, I appreciate film. I love watching football. I think I can spot top talent when I see it, but I'm not like looking at like the angle of a shoulder lean and like a spin move. Like that's just not
right. That's not me.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that can do that, and the film community basically says that DeAndre Swift, you know, his skill set projects most favorably of these top tier guys. But look, I think universally people agree that it's a tier of at least three, and sometimes people say four of those top backs, right? So we're talking Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, and some people still maintain that Cam Akers should be
Cam Akers.
So, yeah, and so
it's gonna be all draft position with Cam Akers, because I don't think he's a special player at all.
Well, we can get it. We can talk more about that. But so
yeah,
as for why DeAndre Swift is not my number one, let's just say those other three guys. So you and I are in agreement that, you know, Swift, Taylor, Dobbins, those are the guys that we're thinking about right as RB1. Okay, I have to. There's the most guesswork involved with DeAndre Swift out of all three of these guys at this point in the process, right? Because we have three awesome years from Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins are going to be definitively measured as better athletes at the NFL Combine. Like, we already know this based off of their profiles dating back to high school. And Swift has like kind of the one great year of production. We've seen him use him some creative ways, but like there's the most to solve for there. Like, I don't know, like to
right.
me, it seems ridiculously risky of a 101 rookie pick to take the player that we know the least about. Like, he's done it for the least amount of time. Like, I feel crazy. Like, every time I brought this up, like, you know, I see Taylor more often ranked as the 103 than the 101. Like, there's a crowd that's moving Dobbins in front of him too, but I can actually get more on board with ranking Dobbins over Taylor than Swift.
Right, because Dobbins was a straight up workhorse. Like, yeah, he was an like when Ohio State was in competitive games, he was not coming off the field. He was the goal line back. He was catching passes. He was doing everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And he played less in the fourth. You know, people make these fourth quarter arguments about some of the receivers, the Alabama guys, whatever. But I mean, that actually did impact Dobbins in the fourth quarter of many games for Ohio State, whereas Taylor got to stay on the field because Wisconsin wasn't blowing people out. So, I mean, Dobbins' production profile really could probably have rivaled Taylor's if he just hadn't been on such a great team.
Right, exactly. So, changing things a little bit. That's the big discussion at running back, right? Is it's Swift, Dobbins, and Taylor. I think you and I are aligned that it's Taylor, it's Dobbins, then it's Swift. I think there's also going to be a big if DeAndre Swift goes 24th overall to the Raiders or whatever, or you know, if he goes in the first round, then yeah, I'll need to rethink some things. I'm actually in I'm in a couple drafts that draft before the NFL draft is just kind of like an added little wrinkle or whatever. And I think those are certainly some cases where there's going to be an edge of you know, not taking Swift. Of, you know, you might get Taylor at 104 in those leagues, right? If someone really believes in Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, or in Superflex, do you think Joe Burrow is the 101?
I think both of the top quarterbacks just belong in that tier with those running backs right now. So it's very difficult. I think it would be like a team based. I might almost make that decision based off of the league that I'm in. Like, I think that you do need to rank Burrow and Tags at 1 and 2, just because I really think these guys are both going to be great pros. And spending an early rookie pick on them this year versus what we know happens to elite quarterbacks in terms of value in Superflex next year, I mean, it'll be basically impossible to buy either one of these guys if they show anything as a rookie. So, but it's context, right? I mean, if you're already, if you're stacked at running back, it's a lot easier to spend that pick on the quarterback. But if you're sitting on, you know, Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray already, you know, you might lean a different direction. So I think the appropriate way really to look at Burrow and Tagovailoa is to just rank them in there with those three running backs and then adjust for league settings. And it creates some interesting trade down opportunities, kind of referencing what you were talking about in those early draft leagues.
So I think there's a really interesting scenario here where Kyler Murray, I mean, I would imagine that his consensus dynasty ranking right now is around like QB 4 or 5. Where do you rank Kyler and Joe Burrow going forward in dynasty?
I would still have Kyler above him.
Ahead.
And just because I think we know what the coach pairing is right now. And we saw some good things in year one of that pairing. And I don't think Kyler has fully unlocked what he can add on the ground yet. And I would expect that wide receiver core to improve year over year. And we just know they're going to throw the ball a lot. So if Burrow, you know, if we project him to Cincinnati, he's going to have some good, you know, surrounding weapons. But I think Burrow's upside as a rusher, like, would maybe be like Andrew Luck ish.
Yeah. It'd be like 250 yards, 4 touchdowns and like a really good year.
Yeah. And that's basically kind of even Dak Prescott styled. Prescott got kind of lucky and had 6 rushing touchdowns each of his first 3 years, but then he kind of came back to earth this year. So
right.
I think Burrow, like, he adds some things. Like, he can win a week when he has the 3 passing touchdowns. And it's the week where he vultures something. But I just think that Kyler really does have kind of a floor moving forward of, you know, 500 to 600 rushing yards, and that matters. And I think Kyler Murray has equal upside as a passer to Joe Burrow. I don't think that's like a hot take.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I don't really think it is either. I definitely would prefer Kyler. Like, if I had the 101 in a super flex league right now, I would probably be like, I would be looking to sell it. I would be looking to sell it for Carson Wentz and Mike Williams, right? Like, I would be looking to sell it, get someone that I can start and be like, yeah, that's fine. And then maybe, you know, either a flex play or a guy I really like with ceiling, you know, moving forward. I actually do have the first overall pick in, you know, the format we were talking about earlier, 30-man rosters, super flex, best ball. But I have no quarterbacks. Literally, it was a full on, like, I'm selling everything that's not tied down for picks, like, because my team was old and it was bad, and I'm either going to take Joe Burrow or try and sell back and get like an old guy, right? Like Fitzpatrick, Philip Rivers, like just someone as a stopgap, and then try and take Justin Herbert a little bit later. Where are you at on Herbert?
Yeah, I think he's probably like mid first. So I would not put him in the tier with Burrow and Tagovailoa. He would be in the tier with the receivers just behind that. And so I think, you know, and Herbert, when you look at like the mock drafts from even trusted resources, he's kind of like all over the place. Like, I've seen him drop below.
I've seen him as high as 5, and I've seen him out of the first round.
Yeah. And so, like, I just think, after those consensus top two, like, and even like NFL draft community outside of dynasty, outside of fantasy, people are still trying to figure out, like, who are the
where he's going to go.
4 or 5. Yeah. Like, some people love Jake Fromm. Some people love Jordan Love. Some people love Justin Herbert. And then, you know, the total wild card, right? Who's the total wild card of the quarterback class?
Yeah. I mean, Jalen.
Yes, absolutely, man. And like, so I think if you're going to trade back,
I'm taking Jalen on every team. Every team, I'm taking Jalen. Yes. No, yes. Because if he sucks, whatever. How many third round rookie picks have you had that literally never start an NFL game? But if Jalen hits his 75th percentile outcome, you have like, you have an asset for the next 5 years. Like, because if he is able to start in the NFL, he's gonna rush for 50 yards a game.
Yeah. So I touched on this a little bit. We've got a rookie guide out at RotoViz, Dynasty Commits, and a rookie guide that's out, Volume 1, pre-combine. And I did a little section on Jalen Hurts because I thought it was necessary. And this is even for single QB, like you're saying, like third round still makes sense. Like, I think there's way worse ways to spend that draft capital, but, I mean, we saw what Lamar Jackson could do this year in terms of rushing, right? I mean, just blew the lid off. And, you know, we've got something called the Box Score Scout over at RotoViz. And, like, some of the comps that come for Hurts, even if we're talking, like, second-round draft pick, like, top 50, which I think is highly reasonable given how desperate and thirsty people are for quarterbacks in the NFL, we get sims of Tyrod Taylor, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, and Andy Dalton all in his top 11. And, like, those are, like, guys who were highly valuable in a super flex format.
Yeah, multi-year NFL starters.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're talking, like, a quarterback that doesn't even go in the first round. You're going to get comps of guys that, like, start 60 to 100 games in the NFL. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just, like, because Jalen, it's like, Justin Herbert, if he hits, he might be, like QB 14 or whatever. Like, he might just be like a guy you can start, but you never feel like it's just a total whatever. But if Jalen hits, he's going to be a guy that you want to start every single week because of just like, that's just how fantasy scoring works. Like, quarterbacks who run just get in like an unfair advantage more or less.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I would take Hurts over, like, I think probably even agnostic of actual NFL draft position. Like, I'm going to take him over Jake Fromm. I've seen some
over
guys
Love. Yeah.
I mean, I think Love, if Love was drafted like top 15, like if that actually, if Love to the Colts happens, which I keep seeing be kind of like a trendy projection now, and Hurts were to fall like out of the second round, then I'd probably still take Love. But I think over Fromm, over Jacob Eason, who it seems to be another kind of divisive guy, like I'm going to take Hurts regardless of draft capital over those guys.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with that. All right. Big question for this draft class, CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, where are you at?
I mean, that's like, which brand of cookie dough do you like better?
Yeah, it's like, do you want the Mercedes or do you want the Jaguar?
Yeah, like they're both awesome, man. I mean, I think tiebreakers will come down to maybe draft position, but probably not because they're both going to be first round picks unless there's like a huge upset. CD probably has like, I mean, he certainly has more impressive profile in terms of like peak production.
Market share, yeah.
Yeah, but we talked about this earlier with the Ohio State guys and also when we were talking kind of about just understanding, you know, college programs. I mean, we can explain away Jeudy failing to get, you know, that 30% dominator rating breakout. Like,
yeah, he played with a bunch of future NFL players.
Yeah, like that, like the teammate adjustment. You know, I think that it's a real thing there. And I mean, we see like, I can't remember who actually posted this, but this is great intel if it's actually true. Like one of the Alabama wide receivers was saying basically like against these crap teams, they would literally just like play rock, paper, scissors to see who was going to get the deep targets that day. And so
that's
like,
funny.
Yeah. And I mean, so, you know, that in some ways that may be, you know, why Henry Ruggs actually even got the targets that he got, like Henry Ruggs on some crap schools, like cornerback four, then a spread formation is just like not even fair. So
him going in the first round to the Eagles at pick 21 is like a lock. And it's like also one of the craziest things. It's like Mecole Hardman going as early as he did to the Chiefs. And the Mecole Hardman pick looks great for the Chiefs. Like it looks like they got the exact player that they needed. But like it just feels like everyone is just expecting Ruggs to go to the Eagles.
I'm so mad about it. I'm really glad that you brought this up because like okay, drafting Henry Ruggs in the first round when you have Jalen Reagor.
Right.
Like, it's so dumb. I don't understand it. Like, Henry Ruggs probably, no matter what, like, his floor is field stretcher for an NFL offense. Like, I think there's pretty much no way he won't be valuable to an NFL offense. But again, this goes back to, like, at a smaller level, the Taylor and Swift conversation that we had earlier. Like I have to project everything about Ruggs other than knowing that he's fast and had some big plays. Like we don't know if he can handle volume. We don't know, like, you know, no one can guard him, which I think could translate to the NFL, but it also might not. Like if he's going to be the wide receiver two on a team versus being the wide receiver 3-4 on a squad against like abysmal defenses, like that's very, very different. And Jalen Reagor, you know, broke out at 19 playing with, you know, far worse surrounding talent at TCU and still managed to get it done and, you know, ran laps around Henry Ruggs in terms of production. So, and Rager's going to destroy Rager's going to have an overall more impressive combine than Ruggs. Like Rager's probably going to be the combine winner amongst wide receivers. So like,
right,
you know, people are a little slow on this. Like he, over the next 30 days, Rager is going to be, he's going to be projected as a round one NFL draft pick. And like in leagues where you're drafting before the NFL draft, and I'm in a couple of those too, like he's an easy, easy target, you know, with late round one picks, because I mean, he's definitely going to jump half a round after people see what he does in Indy.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, that's just a, that's a really good way to approach things. So my answer to this is Lamb, because I think that Lamb can play any position. I think that he can be, he could play X. I think that he could be your Y guy. So like literally his job is just to run nine routes. I think that he could be the Sammy Watkins role. So he, where he plays in the slot and he's the pre-snap motion guy. I literally think he can do anything. I think that, and this is actually probably an unpopular opinion, but I think Judy is probably a slot wide receiver in the NFL, which is really good for fantasy. Like yeah. That's actually yeah. what we want. We want our guys to play slot wide receiver, but I just have no concerns over Lamb at all. Like I think he is going to be, I think he's going to catch 75 passes right away as a rookie. Like I just think he's going to come in and smash.
That's awesome. And like, I'm not going to argue with that whatsoever, because if you're going to say that these guys are in a tier together, like all ties should go to Lamb, right? I mean,
right.
They're going to have the same rookie age. They both early declared, but CeeDee Lamb actually broke out and Judy didn't. Like, if you're going to look for like reasons to put one over the other, I mean, I guess it's fair to give Lamb the edge there, but I agree. I think they're both going to be awesome pros. Like, I'm happy to own either one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the right way to think about it. So, who do you think you are highest on relative to the consensus right now?
At running back, it's at the top. It sounds like it's Jonathan Taylor, but
right.
Give you better names than that. So a guy like a little bit lower down that had great production, and I think he's kind of like an arbitrage, like Zach Moss. Like I've seen some really big outlets rank Zach Moss highly. I think PFF even has him as their RB1, if I saw that correctly. But a guy that's going to be younger, also played at a smaller program, and has a similar skill set and is like 95% of the size, is Michael Warren out of Cincinnati. And he's a guy that I like kind of later on in drafts, in the third, in the fourth. I don't know. I mean, he's going to need a decent combine, or he could be in danger of maybe not getting drafted. But I think if he goes to Indy and shows his skill set is NFL caliber, he could be, you know, like a Jordan Howard type guy that gets drafted in the fifth round and then manages to get some stuff done, like kind of free money. And in the wide receiver position, I know that I'm higher consensus on Jalen Reagor, because I've had this right. argument on like every podcast that I've gone on. I think Jalen Reagor is a tier one guy. I think he's a tier one guy along with CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. That's kind of how I'm viewing him. And another guy that I think people are undervaluing at wide receiver is Justin Jefferson. And I kind of pair him.
I just put Justin Jefferson in the first round of my mock draft that I did for Sports Grid this last week. Like I think that he is so legit.
Yeah, I love that. So I'll give you a little bit of like, this is a nugget that is easy to repeat, and I think people will learn it by the end of draft season. So there's only two guys that are going to be age 21 rookies that were early declares and broke out at age 19. There's only two. That's it. Like that's a pretty sweet, you know, triad of metrics to hit, and it's Jalen Reagor and Justin Jefferson. Like no one else can claim those three things, and we know that all three things, when we're talking rookie age, early declare, and breakout age, like those are very good in terms of understanding what a player's upside and floor might be in the NFL. So these are like really easy late round one picks in rookie drafts in my mind.
Yeah. So the Jalen Reagor thing, so that people know, he had basically a crazy good sophomore season, and his final season numbers at TCU look really bad. 43 receptions, 611 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So that you're like, oh my gosh, this guy had 611 yards. That's horrible. So the thing that you need to know about that is there was basically like no solidity at the quarterback position. The team threw for less than 2,500 yards overall, his 5 receiving touchdowns were the most of anyone on the team. Some fella named Pro Wells, who I believe is a tight end, had 5 receiving touchdowns as well. But the team only threw for 15 touchdowns overall. So, like, a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's the market share stuff that we talk about it being so important. And, you know, when the team had competent quarterback play, Jalen Reagor was a lot better. But I believe that Max Duggan was a 18-year-old true freshman who started after Alex Delton, an old K-State quarterback who transferred there, got benched because the guy just stinks out loud. Like, Alex Delton, just he gets football. Like, he's just not a Big 12 level quarterback.
Yeah, and I think what hurt Reagor in terms of market share, like, so some people might say, all right, well, his numbers were low, but his market share still should have been high, right? Well, you have basically a rookie quarterback at the college level, who's just really not ready for what he's doing, and you end up with over 20% market share to the backs, with very little air yards because he's just checking down like crazy. And so, you know, when Darius Anderson and Alon Nelua have 46 receptions, that's not typical of TCU, and I think that hurt Reagor because he didn't have time or the ability to find Reagor downfield like he was able to happen for him as a sophomore.
Yeah. All right. So who do you think you are lowest on relative to consensus? I should give a couple of guys that I am higher on relative to consensus. The first guy is Lynn Bowden Jr. I see right now on Dynasty League Football, he is consensus ranked as the 29th prospect, but a couple guys don't even have him ranked at all. I think he's probably a second round rookie pick because my assumption would be that maybe every NFL team does not feel this way, but the NFL team that chooses to select him views him as Randall Cobb, Tavon Austin, like a sort of guy who you can give 40 carries, 60 targets, 5 passing attempts, and the guy just scores fantasy points for your roster. Like I think that you have to make the leap of faith that whatever NFL team selects him thinks that he is a legit NFL talent. Like I think that Lynn Bowden is going to be a guy who probably as a rookie, it's going to be more gadgety stuff, but if he plays well, is going to be like a long-term fantasy starter.
Sure. Like, I think Tyreek Hill's rookie season, where he's returning kicks, he's getting a lot of the jet sweeps and, just see what he can do in space. That's probably a good way to look at Lynn Bowden Jr. But I mean, with his experience at quarterback too, he's probably gonna get some wildcat packages, some opportunities to throw the ball. Maybe he's going to be in like the 2-point conversion package for that team. So, it's some sort of like hybrid. I like the Randall Cobb comp as well because of the experience at quarterback. But if he's athletic enough, I mean, Taysom Hill style production is probably possible too. So I really like that. And I mean, when we're talking about the late second or third round of a rookie draft, like, we want to draft for upside, right? Like, the upside of a player like that, that can get on the field in multiple packages early on, it can drive his value up. And even if you watch him over the first half of the season and you just really don't think that the way he's producing is sustainable over the course of his career, like, if he has enough of those pop plays, you can sell him and make some profit, even just flipping him for a 2021 pick. So yeah, I really love the idea of grabbing a player like this.
So one of the other guys that I think I'm probably going to end up being a little bit lower on, and I really wanted to like him, is Laviska Shenault, who he is such a he's like a Rorschach test prospect because he was so good as a junior, well, I guess as a sophomore, and then he just really became a very average player in his final season. Tony Brown, kind of had almost as many receiving yards as him and more touchdowns, and Colorado was just horrible overall. Colorado was a lot worse than expected in his final season. So where are you at with him?
I've got him in kind of the second wide receiver tier. I mean, I don't have him up there with the Lamb, Judy, Reagor tier, but I think he does belong kind of in that next group. I like that you know, similar to Bowden, I mean, he can rush the ball, like, right? I mean, he had over 100 rushing yards in each of his final two seasons, 17 attempts as a sophomore, 23 as a junior, 7 rushing touchdowns, actually, and 10 receiving touchdowns. He has a really unique production profile, but I agree, it was kind of disappointing, especially in the Pac-12, where I feel like you can rack up the stats for him to not take a step forward. I mean, he actually played in more games, but probably only had like 70% of the production year over year. So I think he's probably an NFL wide receiver too. Like, if he could land somewhere that, you know, I've seen Green Bay like as a popular landing spot. Like, if he lands somewhere where there is a Devontae Adams, or you know maybe he's the Ridley to a Julio Jones. Like, I think that's a good way of looking at him. I don't think he's going to be a 160 target guy at any point in his career. That's not really who he is, but I still like him. I mean, I would draft him probably like in the 8 to 10 range of a draft, depending on what the board looked like.
Yeah. I think that's probably fair. I think that, like many prospects who, like, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, if we want to speak historically, like, I just think there's going to be someone who probably likes him more in every draft than I do. I might be wrong. Like, maybe Chenault is, and maybe he destroys the combine, right? Like, maybe he's a lot more fast, like a lot faster and a lot more dynamic than I think probably not, but maybe, right. It's certainly possible.
I think one thing, this isn't really talking about him per se, but I think one thing is going to happen at the combine this year is there's so many awesome athletes that people might fall into a trap of being like, well, he was like the 9th fastest receiver, or but I think you have to keep in mind that it, like, the combine and athletic measurables, like, they're in context of what's happened over the course of years. Like, it's, we can compare these prospects to each other, but they can still be better than prospects that we've seen in the last couple years. And I think that is definitely in play this year, because you're going to have some guys that, I mean, I think Rager is a threat to run sub-4.3. I think Ruggs is going to run sub-4.3. And so when you start looking at somebody like, you know, Chenault, who's probably going to run in the mid-4.5s, it could drive him down the board, but if he still gets the draft capital, like, it doesn't matter. And as long as he's not a negative, like, if the athleticism's not a negative, then we shouldn't drive him down the board.
Yeah, I think that seems about fair. So another thing that, I think a huge strategy point to talk about is, in this class, I think that there is a big tier divide, right? I think DeAndre Swift, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins. I think that's the clear tier one for me. I think all of those guys are going to be immediately kind of what we talked about, you know, top 36, top 40 dynasty fantasy assets once they are drafted. So what do you do if you're holding, you know, the 108, right? The 109, what do you do if you're in the back end of the first round? Do you think there is a strategy to take this year?
Well, you're always, you know, if the first, you never really want to be drafting at the beginning of a tier break, if you feel that strongly about it. So the first thing that you're trying to do is trade up a spot to get into that tier that you feel it is a step above. And so, you know, you can try to, you know, flip a future second or something like that. I mean, if you feel that strongly that you need to get in that other tier, you have to be willing to give up something meaningful. Like, it's not worth like tiptoeing around and then losing out on the deal. But let's say that you can't trade up in that tier, then, you know, obviously you're trying to trade back. The easiest way to do that typically is to trade out of the year altogether. So because then, you know, you're allowing that person a chance to make 2 draft picks, right? So work with your trading partner. You know, if you're sitting at 108 and he's also, let's say, rather than trading up from the 110, maybe he gets the 108 and the 110. You're going to take his 21 first and his 2021 second. I mean, that's going to work for you on your squad in the long run. And then just to trade back, you know, that's going to be league specific, owner specific. It depends on if somebody else drew their tier in a different spot that they're willing to pay you something that's worth it. So I think generally, at least through the first couple of tiers in rookie drafts, you really should be driving running backs to the top of them. So like, if you get stuck there, I think that's a place, rather than taking a Laviska Shenault or a T. Higgins or somebody like that, I'm probably, just to make money on my draft pick early, taking Cam Akers or Clyde Edwards-Helaire or somebody like that, that I think I can flip for additional roster equity more quickly. What would you do, man?
So I actually think there is an argument this year to just take Burrow or Tua because
in the first.
Because I don't know if I would do it in a single quarterback, but also it's going to depend. Like a lot of this stuff is going to shake out, and it's going to depend on what happens in the draft, right? Like if we see like. I mean, at this time last year, remember people were talking about Hakeem Butler, like, oh, this dude's a lock. He's going to be awesome. And then he goes people. In the first pick of the fourth round.
Yeah, some people were.
Some people. And I don't mean to make people like, I liked Hakeem Butler. I didn't like him as the 101 or anything like that. Like, yeah. I don't own him in any dynasty leagues, but I was not a Hakeem Butler camp. Like, I didn't think the guy sucked or whatever. So I think that there is an argument that if you think, Burrow is this super elite guy, he's going to be elite for 10 years, whatever. It's the better thing to do probably is just trade back at that point. I think the right answer is, either do what you said, which is, maybe just try and move back to the first pick and the second round or whatever, pick up some excess value, or just side with whoever's drafted highest. You know, if it's Ruggs, take Ruggs. If it's Chenault, take Chenault. If it's T. Higgins, take T. Higgins. If it's Justin Jefferson, like kind of just side with the NFL on those evaluations.
Yeah, I think that's highly reasonable, man. Trusting the NFL evaluation. I think that works. But for me, like that, to go back to that Burrow and Tagovailoa idea, I think that actually does become viable, like at 112. But I think there's just enough guys that I think are going to get early opportunity and have some solid profiles that still probably in single QB makes sense to go after, the non-onesie position guys.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's kind of an interesting thing about this draft class is there's not even a tight end that people are going to be able to talk themselves into in the first round. There's no TJ Hockenson, no Noah Fant, nothing like that. So it's going to be big time running backs, wide receivers. And I actually think that Hockenson and Fant are going to be harder to acquire this offseason than they would be normally because there's no new shiny young toy for people to fall in love with. Like this Cole Kmet fella. I don't think that he's going to be a hot ticket item in Dynasty at all.
Yeah, there's three tight ends that I could see if they get drafted highly enough would be challengers for like late round two, single tight end, non tight end premium, rookie draft range. So Hunter Bryant from Washington, Albert Okwuegbunam from Missouri, and Bryson Hopkins out of Purdue. So those are the three guys that probably are going to get the draft capital before the end of day two and showed enough production wise, or like in Okwuegbunam's case, the athleticism is going to be there that people are going to want to project that. Right. So, those guys, I think, are all probably like in the 20 to 30 range right now without knowing all those things. But, I think they could rise up the board a little bit, especially if people can't buy last year's wares, like you said. And I think that is really interesting, too, because it's typically a good strategy to target tight ends after the rookie year and trade for them because of the delayed breakout. So, there's some layers to that strategy there, man. Good idea.
Yeah. What is a bummer to me though is I actually would love if maybe Bryant got drafted in the second round to like a team that like, oh dude, if the Patriots take one of these tight ends early, give me that because I want to trade for Noah Fant in every league. Like I think I actually had Fant over Hockenson last year. I think that was a pretty certainly that was a polarizing position. Everyone loved TJ Hockenson, but I think that Fant is just the better fantasy player. Hockenson's better for like real NFL purposes because he's such a good blocker. But I think that Fant is going to have a 3-year stretch in his career where he goes where he has like a Jimmy Graham like run because he just is such a naturally good pass catcher. So like if you had the 105 this year, would you trade that for Noah Fant?
No, I wouldn't trade a tier one rookie pick for him, but I think it's fair to trade a tier two, tier three for him, or even to trade, a late first, and a third or something, just for, sticker shock, maybe to make the other guy feel like he's really getting a deal there. But I like that. And I actually think, Fant, his athleticism is really, you know, it's not on the level of this guy, but, you know, I think a really underappreciated player in the annals of NFL history, probably not a Hall of Famer, but like Hall of really good guy that's no longer with us, Vernon Davis.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe how Noah Fant's career could unfold. And, you know, Davis, when he had a good quarterback, I mean, he had those years where he popped, he had a couple top four tight end seasons. So I think that's, you're probably spot on. I mean, he's a matchup problem. He's probably going to be the number two target getter in that offense in Denver behind Cortland Sutton. So I really like that. I actually might have to send a few feelers out for Fant. I hadn't gotten there yet.
Yeah. So that is, that's definitely someone that I'm on. Who is, who's someone that you are looking to sell this off season? I know this isn't on our agenda, but I'm in dynasty mode now. I got a couple of my teams pulled up and I'm thinking about it. I will say one guy, if you're in a league with me, one guy I am definitely looking to sell is Ezekiel Elliott. Now I'm not going to sell him to you for, like, I'm not trading you Ezekiel Elliott, my Ezekiel Elliott dollar for four quarters, but I do not want Ezekiel Elliott on my fantasy teams. So if you're in a league with me and I have Zeke, come at me for him.
So I'm in a startup right now, where I traded up to get a second first round pick, and I'm sitting here at 110. It's a super flex dynasty startup and Zeke's on the board. And, I don't think I'm going to be able to pull the trigger on him, which is crazy. But I'm with you there. I think it makes a lot of sense to trade Zeke for, if you can get a tier one first round rookie pick this year and another round one and you know, maybe like a productive veteran or something, or to trade just down like a tier to like a Joe Mixon plus some draft capital. I think those types of ideas work for him. I think, you know, Mike McCarthy's never had a back like Zeke, right. I don't know, man. I don't see Zeke getting like the 70, 80 years. Like, I don't even see Zeke ever having a receiving season like what Leonard Fournette had this year. And I think that's what we would want out of a player that, you know, is typically valued as a top five dynasty startup pick right now. I think he is overvalued. So I'm with you there. I'm looking to sell some of these like mid-career wide receivers that I don't think are going to be 160 target guys ever again. So like, I think Stephon Diggs is probably still overvalued a little bit. Like, yeah. I like Stephon Diggs. Like, it's not, I mean, he's a great player, like, and he's fun to own. And I think he's objectively very talented. But I just don't think he's going to achieve target hog status again. I think the team likes Thielen in the underneath role, and they've got Irv Smith Jr. And Diggs is more like, unfortunately for fantasy purposes, in like 100 to 110 target downfield threat role now. And I just don't really, like, I would rather own guys like Cooper Kupp than Stephon Diggs when we're talking within the same tier for fantasy purposes. And I think Odell Beckham Jr. still has a ton of name value, but I really think that Odell Beckham Jr.'s best statistical seasons are probably behind him.
Or past him.
Yeah, yeah. And not that he won't be a talented player, not that he won't be a productive fantasy player, but I still see him, you know, a lot of people valuing him at like the 1-2 turn in startups. And I just don't think that makes sense. Like, I think the team and Baker Mayfield and specifically has shown that Jarvis Landry is can be used more down the field. And he really seems to be the guy that's trusted in that offense over OBJ to make the play. Like, over the last couple of years, he's proven that to be true. So I just, you know, I think in terms of name brand guys, those are the ones you really want to sell. Like, it's not sexy to say,
right,
sell this, like, you know, top 40 to 45 player overall. Like, we're looking for top two startup round guys that we can sell and make money on. So I'd say Diggs and Beckham are at the top of the list for me.
I think that is all pretty fair. What about Derrick Henry? I mean, he is like the most obvious sell candidate of all time. I think the problem is you'd have a hard time, yeah, finding someone willing to buy him at even 75 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, the sell window for Henry was, if you didn't think you could win the title, it was mid-run this year, and it's not going to open back up again until he has a good September next year. Like, I think most dynasty analysts are going to label him a sell. So, it's just not going to make any sense.
Right. Yeah. I think that is fair.
He actually could go the other way on it. Like, he could get driven down enough that he becomes a buy.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get Derrick Henry for the 109 and Cole Beasley. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. Like, That's for, but I mean that's the dimes on the dollar, right?
The offer that people who are trying to trade for Derrick Henry right now, you'd get veteran wide receiver and a mid first. That would be the standard offer for Derrick Henry right now, I would imagine. Would be non-premium first, veteran wide receiver.
So would you trade, okay, let 108. We talked about the 108 earlier. So would you do like 108 and Adam Thielen for Derrick Henry?
If my team was like not like gonna win this year, like if I didn't have premium guys, I think I probably would. Yeah, I think I'd take Thielen. But I also think Thielen is a sell though too. So like I'd be doing that with eyes on trying to move Thielen again probably.
Okay, let me make it a little harder real quick. So let's say 108 and like Tyler Lockett for Derrick Henry.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm running to accept that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there you go. Like and I think that would basically be like Tyler Lockett's probably a late first trade value. Like, so you're basically saying like, hey, if we can trade two non elite first for Derrick Henry, it still probably makes sense to do that. You're going to be able to sell him for more than that in September if he comes out and does this again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're definitely, or what you're looking for is him getting like, when he gets the deal, like whenever he signs his deal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. If he signs a sick contract, that's going to be another good sell window for him too. Cause the Titans are going to pay him. Make no mistake. The Titans, they are going to pay him.
Six years, 90 million is the floor, right? Is that
that's what he said.
Oh my gosh.
They are going to pay him for sure.
They're not going to treat him like Melvin Gordon.
Right. Yeah. They are going to pay him. No doubt. All right, man. Tell us what you guys have going on over at RotoViz and at Dynasty Command right now.
Yeah. So, for those of you listening that haven't been exposed to our work before, so Dynasty Command Center is like a premium Slack channel where, you know, we give advice to people, you know, from helping with your startup to just trade ideas, or even, you know, maybe giving some takes that are a little bit more well explained than can typically be done in like a 1,000-word article on a website. And so RotoViz actually purchased Dynasty Command Center, and they're kind of intertwined now. And so you'll start to see Dynasty Command Center be a brand on our Dynasty content on the site. So you can find all my work at rotoviz.com. And we've got a rookie guide out right now. There'll be 3 volumes of it. So we've got pre-combine up. It's got top 60 for, you know, just single QB PPR, like your vanilla PPR formats. We've got Superflex. We've got Titan Premium in there. We've got some awesome analysis and content from, you know, awesome, great guys like Sean Siegel and Blair Andrews, who are two of the premier researchers and like practical application guys in the industry for any format, but especially for Dynasty. And it's $15 for all 3 copies of this guide. It shows up in your email. All I got to do is pay one time. We take care of the rest. And the graphics are like just sweet. Like, I feel like I'm a little old fashioned in this way, but I still like the idea that like magazines exist. And this really feels like an on the shelf emag. Lots of analysis on like wide receiver breakouts and production and how to beat the NFL draft when it comes to targeting running backs. Like, just really cool content. We've got over 29 fantasy football tools on the site right now. There's no like premium layer to a subscription. You can get 2 years at rotoviz.com for $75, and anything that we post there is yours to enjoy. So check it out, rotoviz.com.
There we go. All right, everyone. Curtis, thank you so much for joining the show. That was an awesome 45 minutes or so of fantasy football discussion. I think that the people will really enjoy it. Everyone, make sure to check out sportsgrid.com, and we will be back next week continuing our discussion on Dynasty Fantasy Football.